Chevy Equinox with forward collision alert, automatic emergency braking, and available all-wheel drive. It's my ultimate mobile device. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com to schedule a test drive. Chevy Equinox. It's your choice. Own it.
I can't believe that Tim used the S word.
Yeah, he did.
Several
and
times.
We will hear the S word in the forecast for the next day or so.
No. We didn't bleep it either, did we?
No. No, no. We let it, Greg, go, and yeah. we let it fly. We didn't hit the delay button.
We didn't hit the pause button on there. No.
Should I do that this morning? When I think he's going to use the S word, I should bleep him.
Maybe. Yeah.
Even though it's true, we just don't want to hear it.
Yeah.
Especially, not after the week we had. That's
no.
for sure.
Oh. So nice.
Man, that was nice. Doesn't that just change your whole frame of mind and outlook?
Completely.
Wow.
Completely. Here's how I knew we were going to have some snow, though. I took the snow brushes out of my car.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
It's my fault.
I leave mine in year-round, actually.
Well, you leave your I voted sticker on.
No, it is now.
Your coat for
actually, it's
months.
Off the coat, but I haven't thrown it away yet.
Why are you keeping that?
I'm starting a collection. Just like you have your Harry Truman button or whatever.
My Harry Truman button?
No, oh, George McGovern. You have your George McGovern button.
Well, I think we need to start a collection for Schwani.
I think that's history. The campaign buttons. I have Ronald Reagan buttons. I mean, I've got a lot of campaign buttons.
You have Millard Fillmore, too?
I wish I did. Did they have pins back then?
Probably. I don't know.
But be that as it may, I'm looking out the window. I can't believe we're in the same city as we were yesterday.
Yesterday and the day before. I know. Yeah. Well, I think we broke a record Thursday, record high for the date,
right.
83.
Right.
Wow. And now we are at 49 at O'Hare. Looking at temperatures in western Illinois, like I said at the newscast, 42 in Dixon, 42 in Princeton.
Hmm. Did you just do a newscast?
Yeah, and Andy will. Ordinarily, you tell me that you're hanging on my every word.
I was hanging on your every word,
but you still don't know.
I wasn't
if I did
paying
a newscast.
Attention, but I was saying, I know when I don't hear any more words, then it's time for me to talk. Doesn't mean I'm paying attention. No, I'm kidding. What would we do without you?
Well,
can't even tell you the number of times I thought, what would we do without it? So happy Eastern Orthodox Easter to those celebrating.
Happy Easter to you.
Thank you.
Happy Easter.
Kalo Pascha to both of you.
Okay.
Did you get your candy yet?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Did you see the picture I posted on Facebook?
No, I didn't.
We were laughing at the household, yes.
I was at a Walgreens, and the Easter candy aisle was decimated, and they had big signs up that said 50% off Easter candy. And I thought, this is the perfect illustration for what I've been saying all these years.
What did you get?
I'm not a big candy person.
Oh, you're not?
No, not really.
With the discussions we've had about good old time candy bars and chewing gum.
I like a good quality piece of chocolate bar, something like that. But I'm not a big chocolate marshmallows. No thanks. Peeps. No thanks.
You don't like the peeps?
Don't. I like putting them in the microwave and watching
them explode or melt.
I do enjoy that, but. But
I can see you standing at the microwave laughing like crazy as this thing just melts.
But not to laugh. It's hilarious. It's fantastic. It's like a sci-fi movie. Bum, 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 bum. Yeah, I could do without them. Now, if there was a 50% off lasagna aisle, I'd be all about
there
that.
There you go. Okay.
That.
Now that's an aisle.
That's an aisle. Somebody should invent a lasagna aisle. That I do enjoy. But anyway, happy Easter. It's going to be big celebrations all over the Chicago area today. I know with my Greek peeps, if you'll excuse the expression, that lots of lambs will be roasting today. That's for sure. And I'm looking
Are you doing any of the roasting?
I am not.
You're not?
But I'm looking.
No cooking with you today?
No.
Wow.
No, I'm busy working here.
Okay.
I'm busy working.
You have a radio and TV station to run.
But I am looking forward to putting some in my belly. I can't wait for that. I said a couple of minutes ago that I feel responsible for the snow that we're going to get because I took my
snow. You took your brushes out of the car.
The snow brushes out of the car.
The scraper.
But somebody is on the text line asking, are the snow plows put away for spring? I would guess not. I don't know for sure, but
we may need them in some form tomorrow morning.
But aren't they just saying that it's going to be because the ground is too warm because we've had 80 degrees for the last 4 days?
Yes, but there may be some accumulation on grassy areas, which can happen at this time of year.
Do you snowplow your grassy area?
No, but what about...
How is your grassy area, by the way? It's been ages since I've
asked. Now you're getting a little touchy there.
Andy, how's your grassy area?
Mine is nicely manicured, yes.
Yeah, thank you.
Seriously, though, there could be some slippery spots with a low of 33 mm-hmm. happening this evening. You know, the morning commute might be
messy.
A little bit messy. Yeah,
it's going to be like slushy. I don't think it's going to be rain.
The phrase wintry mix comes to mind, no. Even though we are almost one full month into spring.
Right. If I ever wind up on another music station as a DJ, that's going to be my DJ name, Wintry Mix.
Wintry Mix. Doing the overnight show.
Yeah, Wintry Mix.
Hey, Wintry Mix with you.
Yeah, we're laying down. So I had 2 to 3 inches of classic hits.
Light the fire. Stay warm.
Yeah, but I don't think we're going to have to shovel or snowplow or anything like that. Do you?
No, not like that.
It's just that we're spoiled now because we've had this fantastic weather the last few days. So it's a little shocking. Hey, let's remember it's April 14th. It's still early.
It's April 16th.
16th, then. That's what I meant.
That's what I said. April 16th.
Reading is not one of my strong suits. We've had blizzards right around the middle
sure
of April.
Have.
We've had terrible weather in the middle of April, so it could happen, but it doesn't look like it's going to right now.
No, nothing like that.
My pernt.
This will be because of the fact that we're getting the cooler air and precipitation. Yeah. It's just going to turn into some of that nice, messy snow that we have.
Wintry mix with you.
You know, an accumulation meaning an inch or two, if that.
No, I don't even think that much. You know what, really? I don't even know what I'm saying. Why would I say I? No, I'm saying no, I don't think so. On what am I basing that? That's my wishful thinking forecast for today. I have no scientific basis whatsoever. Well, we'll see what happens. But it's supposed to, now, if I was paying attention to your forecast, your newscast, which, as you know, I hang on every word.
Until last hour.
All I know is when you stop talking, that's when I'm supposed to start. You did say that it's going to get nice again toward the end of this coming week.
Back into the 60s. That's right.
Yeah,
yes.
That's good enough.
Back into the 60s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good enough.
Nothing like the past few days, though. I'll tell you. Outside nice. In shorts and a t-shirt and walking around.
Yeah.
Oh, it was wonderful.
I grilled out 3 days in a row.
Yeah.
So nice outside.
Absolutely.
I made my famous. I actually thought of you because you've expressed interest in my honey mustard salmon that I do on there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's my favorite.
It's my favorite fish. So
it's my favorite fish. I would agree with that. But the honey mustard, salt, pepper. I put a little dill on it, and then a thin layer of honey mustard, like a nice quality honey mustard.
Mm-hmm.
But really, you know, you could put any honey mustard. I happen to use. Like a fancy schmancy one because the mustard tastes better. And you put that on the grill, about 140, 45 degrees internal temperature. And it's pretty good stuff.
What's the external temperature?
It's pretty hot in the grill. It's pretty hot when I open that hood up.
Mm-hmm.
I made some nice steaks. I went full carnivore.
Nice.
This week.
What kind of steaks? Filet?
They were filets.
New York strip?
Yeah, they were filets.
Filets?
Yes, yes, they were. Very delicious.
My friend sent me a recipe for Cajun-style filets. Mm. And actually, at one time, the late chef Paul Prudhomme marketed a mix of seasonings, called it the magic seasonings.
Oh, yeah.
For fish, for beef. And, you know, very easy to do.
Is it good, though?
Oh, it's very good.
I don't know if I want my steak Cajun style.
No. In fact, some years back, we were down in New Orleans and ate at his restaurant. And I had his Cajun style steak. It was one of the best meals I have ever had. It was delicious.
That was very interesting.
Yeah.
Check
it out.
I guess that would be good on a steak. I tend to be kind of a minimalist. Salt and pepper. If I'm feeling
super
fancy, I'll put some oregano on it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But I like those. I like those rubs that you can use to, you know, bring out certain flavors on beef, fish.
What do you put on your steak, Sandy?
You know, I like the a little salt, pepper, maybe a little peppercorn.
Oh yeah, peppercorn.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the peppercorn.
Yeah,
yeah.
Steak au poivre.
That too.
Steak au poivre. That's the if you go to a French bistro, they serve the steak, then it's loaded with peppercorns.
Ah, okay.
It's really, really good. And they serve it with fries, your other favorite.
Ooh, the frites.
Your Pulled other favorites.
Pulled frites.
Pulled frites.
Ooh, look what a fancy steak show we are.
Uh-huh. Oui, oui.
Frites. Ooh, look what a fancy little radio show this is today. Hey, listen to this. They're talking French.
Not very well, but they are.
I hope they say French toast.
French onion soup.
I made some grilled cheese sandwiches.
On the grill?
French. I could have done it on the grill.
You could have done them on the grill.
I didn't, but I made sandwiches on TV this week, which I'll tell you, one of the sandwiches was a major, major, major hit. Not because of me, because of Stanley Tucci. It was his recipe that I recreated. But I made my favorite sandwich, which is a good old-fashioned grilled cheese sandwich with caramelized onions on it.
That was great. We binged-watched his series, Searching for Italy, The Food.
That's such a good show.
Wow. Oh. All you want to do is eat Italian after that.
Have you seen the Eva Longoria series?
No, I haven't. You were talking about it last week.
Supposed to be similar, only she travels around Mexico.
Mexico.
Mm-hmm. And features different chefs and cooks around Mexico. And I haven't seen it yet because I only watch Channel 9. My TV only gets
only
Channel
gets
9.
Channel 9.
So
you have the rabbit ears position just so,
do,
right?
Yes, I
the
do.
The aluminum foil on the right one?
The Romberg rabbit ears.
Romberg rabbit ears.
Right.
Only those of us of a certain age know of Romberg rabbit.
Right. Everybody else, find somebody 80 years old and they'll explain what we're talking about.
You're a very senior presenter, but...
Wow. Are we out of
presenter.
Time already?
We will be if we keep going at this rate.
We are already.
Well, friends, thank you, senior presenter, Mr. Richards.
Mm-hmm.
Today, friends, get out your compasses and protractors and devices because we go to Furnace Creek, California.
Say what?
Furnace Creek, California. And we're doing this in light of the fact that we did have extraordinarily warm weather here this past week. Unfortunately, it isn't extending into the next few days. But at any rate, Furnace Creek, California has a population of about 130 people. That's up a little bit from the 2010 census when they had maybe something like 120. But we bring up Furnace Creek because you thought it was warm here.
Are you not going to tell us why it's called Furnace Creek?
I'm going to, because the name is derived from the fact that it is one of the hottest places in the world.
Oh, my.
The headquarters for Death Valley National Park are at Furnace Creek. Mm. And they have had some of the hottest temperatures ever recorded on the face of the earth.
How hot was it?
It was so hot that it was 120 degrees or more for 43 consecutive days in the summer of 1917. Now, it's not as hot there today, but they did have temperatures last week in the upper 90s. It's 68 now at Furnace Creek, California, going up to a high of 92 under very sunny, warm skies. Oh, by the way, it's 190 feet below sea level.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
You're quite welcome.
Is that all?
That's all. This is your presenter, your junior presenter.
You've been listening to Mr. David Schwann with today's far-flung forecast. We have another legend for you right now, though. One Mr. Dr. Kevin Most, Chief Medical Officer, Central DuPage Hospital. Those of you who have ever gone to see Kevin, if you wonder why he tugs on his earlobe at the end of an examination, that would explain why, taking the inspiration from Carol Burnett, who ends all of her broadcasts that way. Good morning, Kevin. How are you?
Good morning, Dean. Well, 45 degrees and raining on a Sunday, I guess I'm still okay.
Yeah, it's not bad. I mean, we were just spoiled the last few days, that's all. But,
So was the tug on the ear, was that a saying hello to somebody? Was that a message
that
to someone?
That was a message to Carol Burnett. When she was first starting in show business, she would tug on her ear at the end of every show as a sign to her grandmother that everything was okay.
That's cool.
Her grandmother who raised her, and then it just became tradition, you know, and she still does it at the end of every performance, everything that she does. She gives a little tug on the old ear. And can you believe that Carol Burnett, she seems so timeless to me, is about to turn 90 years old and still hilariously funny. Yeah, isn't that amazing? I mean, right, it really is quite amazing, isn't it? I mean, and I'll give all the credit in the world to medical science of how how we look at 90-year-olds today is quite different than we did 20, 30 years ago. People can still be very vibrant at the age of 90 and above.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, my mother will be 91 here in a month and still living alone, sharper than sharp, probably more on top of things than I am, still drives. So absolutely. So people like Carol Burnett, when you have good genes like that and take good care of your body, you can still have not only a good quantity of life, but a great quality of life
right.
as well.
Yeah, often that's those two things don't go hand in hand. So I wanted to ask you, because the weather has been so nice, I was talking about how I grilled out the last several nights. Are there any dangers in health-wise in grilling out? I've heard people say, you know, that sometimes you get the fumes from charcoal, the gas fumes, not good on things that you may be grilling. Is there any truth to any of that, or is it perfectly safe to be grilling outside?
Oh, it's perfectly safe. I mean, a couple things. One, as far as what you're inhaling, really you're outside, the air circulation, it dilutes that very, very quickly. So anytime you get smoke, obviously, it's going to irritate you a little bit, but not in this quantity is it going to cause any problems. Certainly, probably one of the cleaner ways to cook is obviously with gas, but certainly charcoal has still been used very highly with no side effects whatsoever and no concerns from a health view.
Some people have said that because some charcoal briquettes are made, with fibrous material. It's not just charcoal. It's fibrous materials. There's some chemical compounds in there to hold it all together, that the burning of all of that, the fumes going on your food, is not healthful. You don't have any concerns about that?
I don't. I'll tell you one thing, and just for the barbecue people out there, this is a bigger concern that we have right now, is the wire brushes that you use to clean your grill. Mm. Those little specks of wire sometimes get stuck to the grill, then they get stuck to the food, and then they're ingested. And we've had numerous cases where that wire has actually punctured through the intestine and has caused a problem. So really watch that's probably the biggest health effect or the biggest health concern we have right now with grilling, is those wire brushes and what they can do to your intestines.
Yeah, probably. You know, they sell, wooden scrapers for the grills that probably would wind up being safer. They have some that are sort of, I guess, like a plastic something, you know, that resists obviously high temperatures, much better than the bristly metal things that a lot of us are using.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a combination of how you make sure that that's clean as well, but then also make sure that you're cooking appropriately, that you're hitting temperatures, especially with chicken. Chicken on a grill, the outside may look done, but the inside may not. High cases of salmonella with undercooked chicken.
Right.
So certainly make sure that your chicken is fully cooked if you're going to cook it on the grill.
Yeah, I've become a huge fan of the internal thermometer. You know, that you put the probe in the food or the thermometer in the food. You can instantly read what's going on, not outside, but inside, to test the doneness of whatever it is you're cooking. I mean, if you're doing a steak, you can exactly know, you know, when to take it off so it's medium or medium rare or well done, whatever your preference. But you have to hit definitely a minimum temperature with chicken. Otherwise, it can definitely cause you some health issues. So I cannot recommend those enough.
Chicken and pork are probably the biggest ones that we get concerned about from an infectious disease point of view as far as undercooked meats. But yeah, like you said, those screening tools are available. You can get them on Amazon. They're very easy to use and very accurate, and that'll keep your family safe.
Yeah. You know what? Somebody on our text line here from the 224 area code says, I use crumpled up aluminum foil to clean the grill off. That's a really good idea.
Does it
seem like a good idea to you, too? Yeah, I think yeah. Yeah, and you know, not all that expensive either. So I just learned about ChatGPT this week, and what it is, and you know, I guess all the kids that are, you know, more computer savvy than me have known about ChatGPT, where you put in questions. And it can write an essay for you. It really, to me, it replaces thinking. And the computers are able to come up with long essay-like answers to questions that you have. So if you're a student and taking tests, it's basically doing your homework for you. But now this ChatGPT is having an effect on the medical field as well, right?
Yeah, Dean, it's amazing. When you look at this, ChatGPT came out in November of last year. So not that long ago, very short period of time. Last week, it was just shared with us that ChatGPT had not only passed the licensing exam, it had passed the board exam, wow, and had done extremely well in the MCAT exam.
Wow.
So when you look at that, it's like, holy cow, where are we going with this? But certainly in the world of medicine, we will have some great uses for it. That it's a little bit over its ski tips right now, but for this only being, you know, 6 months old, it's amazing how far it's gotten in this period of time.
Yeah, I think it's kind of scary, to tell you the truth. That, I mean, you know, we always have, you know, talked about and, you know, somewhat joked that computers are taking over the world. This literally could take over the world. And, you know, who would be comfortable with a doctor who, you know, went through all of the examinations that they have to go through with the computer doing all of the thinking for the person? And in some cases, even, you know, criticizing you and downplaying you. I mean, it is literally a computer program that does the work of a human being, which I'm personally a little uncomfortable with.
Oh, yeah. No. We all are. And, you know, one of the things with even just the internet and, you know, over the impact it's had over the past 10, 15, 20 years, you know, many people come into their doctor's office already having gone on to Dr. Google to know exactly what they have. Well, this is Dr. Google on steroids. So we have to understand that patients are going to use this. The side that they don't understand is that doctors put a whole bunch of information together. And not only that, the ethics, the compassion, the communication that doctors learn as to how to give bad news, how to give good news, how to promote, how to encourage, that can't be read off a piece of paper. certainly there probably will be some areas of ChatGPT that actually save the doctor documentation time, which will allow them to have more face time with patients, which is something patients have been asking for years.
I guess it's just a matter of finding, you know, where is the right point for this? You know, where is it helpful? When is it intrusive? Again, to me, it just seems like, you know, maybe you're going to lose your job because some company is going to bring in ChatGPT to replace you. It seems like there are as many downsides as up to this, but very interesting that it's beginning to have an effect now on the medical world. I'll tell you what ChatGPT can't do is answer your questions that you have for Dr. Kevin Most. You can call in 312-981-7200, or you can text in your question. When we come back from the break, Dr. Most answers them all. And it's 9:51. This is Dean Richards, Sunday morning on WGN with Dr. Kevin Most, Chief Medical Officer, Northwestern Central DuPage Hospital. No COVID issues, really, to discuss this week, right? I mean, this is the first week in a very long time when there are really no issues to discuss at all, I don't think.
Yeah, Dean, well, it's interesting. You know, we spoke last week about the Arcturus, you know, the new variant that is really surging, and it's surging really across the country and across the world. Probably will be the dominant strain soon, and probably the most interesting thing that came out is that one of the big side effects or one of the big symptoms of this is red, itchy eyes. So individuals who think that their red, itchy eyes are from allergies at this time of the year really should be tested for COVID to make sure that it's not this strain. But that's probably the biggest, newest thing on the horizon right now.
The 847 area code says that I had COVID. I am asymptomatic after 1 week, but I keep testing positive. Am I still contagious?
No, you're not contagious anymore because you're asymptomatic. However, you can continue to test positive. And we've told this for, you know, 3 years now, that some people can test positive for up to a month later, when in fact they're not shedding the virus and they're not contagious and they're not causing symptoms. But unfortunately, there still is some remnant of that virus in the body so that you're still testing positive. But if you're asymptomatic, you're 10 days post, you are fine as far as contagiousness.
847 area code. Question for Dr. Most. Is it safe to have a CT scan if you've got an artificial hip?
Absolutely. So people think about imaging, and we think about two major kinds of imaging, CAT scans and MRIs. So CAT scans are very high radiation, but very fast. MRIs, where we're using magnetic resonance. Now, the bad thing about CTs and hips and CTs and knees is depending on what area they're looking for, because it'll kind of break up the picture. But certainly is safe, especially if they're doing a CT of your head or your chest. And it's very rare when they do a CT of the hip, especially someone with an artificial hip. But yes, it is safe. And two, the images in some areas may be distorted a little bit, but I assure you that if they're ordering a CT knowing you have a hip, the distortion is not going to be anywhere near the concerned area that they're scanning.
When would they choose to use a CT scan as opposed to an MRI, as opposed to a good old-fashioned X-ray?
Yeah, it's a really good question, Dean, because as we start to look at this, and I'll tell you, if people haven't seen what an MRI can do, it shows the anatomic, you know, down to the individual arteries and individual tendons. So really a lot of musculoskeletal issues. If someone's going to be looking at your knee or at an elbow, often they'll do an MRI for that because they really want to see into that joint space and how much is there. Very common for the backs. CT, on the other hand, can be used for many things, and including what we call PET CTs, where we're actually looking at the activity of the cells. So we might be looking for cancer. We may be looking for other illnesses where there's high activity, high cellular activity, which can be picked up by the CT scan. So really, a lot of people will start with a CT scan for some abnormalities, and the doctor will say, you know what, we really need to do an MRI to see more anatomically what's going on versus functionally.
Why wouldn't you just go right to the MRI, right to the gold standard? Is there some risk in that you don't want to do it unless you, you know, absolutely feel it's necessary?
Oh, no, no. And believe me, they both have different uses. So if I'm... It depends really what I am concerned about and what I am looking for. So, you know, although we look at it and say, gosh, the MRI now has gotten so good from an anatomical point of view, that may not be what I'm looking for. I may be looking for activity in a normal area. So really, it really depends on what the reason is for the test. And sometimes just a simple chest X. If I'm looking for pneumonia, I don't need to do a $5,000 CT. To diagnose pneumonia. I could do that with a $100 chest x-ray.
Dean, please ask the doctor what he thinks about stem cell therapy for arthritic joints.
Well, it's very interesting. You know, stem cell therapy has really gone crazy. Now, when you talk about arthritis, we have to remember that there's many different kinds of arthritis. You know, something as simple as osteoarthritis. As we age, we wear down those cushions to get to where we're bone on bone. Will stem cell help with that? No, it's not. What stem cell is going to do is the body decides for some reason that it sees something foreign with its rheumatoid arthritis or many other arthritises that are kind of unclear as to the cause. So it sees that as being foreign, so it attacks its own joint. So certainly, depending on how debilitating it is, stem cell is certainly going to be one of those where it turns that portion of it off to say, hey, this is a normal joint. Stop attacking me. So individuals who juvenile rheumatoid arthritis, you've seen these young kids, that body's immune system has said, hey, I don't know what this is, but I'm going to attack it, when in fact, it's totally normal tissue. So certainly a portion of patients, that is something to discuss with your physician. But if you're older and you have arthritis due to just old age and wearing down of your bones, it's not because the immune system is fighting that joint. It's because you've worn those cushions that are naturally there, and you just wore them out.
Yeah, exactly. Dr. Kevin Most is the chief medical officer at Northwestern Central DuPage Hospital. Always a pleasure to have you on. I hope you have a great Sunday today, Kev. Thanks.
You got it, Dean. We'll talk soon.
Not that I don't have 100% complete faith in your forecast. God bless you.
It's Tim Joyce's forecast.
Well, Tim Joyce's forecast. But my pal, Bill Snyder, who is Tom Skilling's producer.
Yeah.
You hear Tom frequently referring to Bill Snyder. We're going to talk with him in a couple of minutes to explain this crazy weather.
Okay. Very good. Very good.
Seems like a good day to talk about weather.
I should, when I finish the newscasts, I should... Now, from now on, say, and coming up very shortly, our senior presenter on Sunday morning, Dean Richards.
Yeah, that would be nice.
You wanted to be called Your Royal Highness after you inherited all the money last week from that prince.
Hey, like if I get an email from some Haitian prince telling me that, I have to assume that it's true and that I'm loaded with money. We have not been able
Have you seen any of the money yet?
Not yet.
No, okay. No,
you just can't... Send over
$1 million.
$1 million. That takes time. But the second I get it, you'll be the first to know. I'm positive it's going to come.
Yeah, I'll get a message saying, I've got the money. You can't have any.
No, it'll be short. A message will be much shorter than that. I'm thinking something like, see ya, sucker.
Will there be any words?
Possibly. But anyway, this is a weird weather time that we're in right now. So I thought we'd chat with an expert coming up in a couple of minutes. And also we're going to have an in-studio visit from Frank Ferrante, who is starring in the big Zazu show that's over at Hotel Cambria. He's going to stop in, and he's got a talent to introduce us to a very special person that was going to be performing in Chicago that we should know. So we're all going to learn about somebody new here today. Can you just feel the educational value of this show today?
That's why we win the awards win.
Yeah. We're just very shy about talking about all the Peabody Awards.
I know. They're very modest.
The Mr. Peabody
very
Awards
modest.
That we've won.
Outstanding presenter.
You're stuck on that today. You're stuck on the whole.
I like that term, though. You are the presenter.
It's very dignified.
It is. It is.
When we do our show live from the King's coronation in a couple of weeks,
we have to wear a tie and tails for that. Tux.
What do they call that? Morning suit?
A morning suit, yeah.
Onesie. What's it called? Something.
A onesie.
Yeah, I don't know what. It's called something, isn't it?
So we're doing the show
from the coronation.
From the coronation now. Yeah.
From the coronation.
This show is everywhere.
Everywhere.
On paper.
Yes.
It is everywhere. Maybe one of the most iconic television theme songs of all time. Theme song from the Carol Burnett Show. Believe it or not, Carol Burnett is about to turn 90 years old. And she's got a big television special that is celebrating her birthday coming up. So we'll share a conversation that we had with the great Carol Burnett, all coming up for you in just a little while. Also coming up a little bit later on in the show, we'll get into our Week in Theater segment, as we'd mentioned. Our pal Frank Ferrante, who plays the character named Forte in Cabaret Zazu, will be joining us. Always a lot of fun when Frank stops by. And he's got some exciting news about his own future here in Chicago, but also is going to be introducing us to someone who is coming to Chicago, who is an incredible performer, and we'll get into all of that coming up a little bit later on. Andy, what's the latest? It seems like that we've had a lot of closure in sports this week.
Yeah, for the White Sox, the Bulls and the Blackhawks,
Bulls,
for sure.
Bulls and the Blackhawks, and it's hard to focus on all the great days that Jonathan Toews has given us. Because it's sad. I mean, it has to end for everybody, I suppose. But he's given us some amazing, amazing days. Maybe some of the most amazing days, right?
Yeah, you know, I think Patrick Kane got a lot of the headlines because of the way he played the game, a little flashy, and his nickname was Showtime. And of course, Jonathan Toews throughout the years has been known as Captain Serious, but he is one of those rare types of players that at a very young age was charged with being the captain of an original six franchise. He was 20 years old when he was named the captain of the Blackhawks, and found his way through it all, and was a big contributor to three Stanley Cups. Of course, the guy scored 372 goals. I mean, people forget that he was nearing 400 goals with the Blackhawks, and it's hard to imagine a time where Jonathan Toews and or Patrick Kane were not in a Blackhawks lineup. And it's going to be that way starting without both of them for next year, which is crazy to think after all the great times that both have provided Blackhawks fans through these years. But you're right. I mean, sometimes, you know, things have to come to an end, unfortunately. The old saying is you'd rather quit on somebody a year too early than a year too late when you're, you know, saddled with a contract. But I think that both sides handle this really, really well. If it can be handled well by both sides, I think that the Blackhawks have been very transparent as to what they've been doing and what they've tried to do throughout this year with the eyes on the lottery and the draft and try to build a new franchise from those picks. And I think Jonathan Toews handled it with class as well. I don't think we really expected anything else out of the captain, but kind of the matter-of-fact way that he just went about his business on the other night and scored a goal, almost scored the game-winning goal as well in overtime.
Right.
But it was great that the team gave him a chance to go out in front of the fans.
Yeah, he was very eloquent in his simplicity of just saying thank you to Chicago, that his heart will always be in Chicago. Will he wind up on another team?
You know, it's hard to say. The way he's been talking, it sounds to me as though he's done playing, but there's a competitive edge in that guy that I don't think anybody realizes how deep it burns and how much of a disappointment the last few years have been for him with illness and not being able to get his body ready to go for a regular season campaign. So that said, I think that he'll probably take a couple months, I would think, to try to figure out what his future is going to be. But I don't ever count him out. But just from the way he's been talking recently and lately, it sounds as though he's done.
Yeah, sure would be weird to see him in another sweater. Yeah.
It'd be awful. It's hard to see Kane in the blue of the Rangers too.
It's hard. Same thing. I was watching the sports. They showed a clip of Anthony Rizzo hit a home run. Or something. Mm-hmm. It's like that's not right. I don't want to see him in a Yankees uniform.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy to think about all the guys that have been, since. Basically, since 2019, 2020, with the Cubs starting to clean house a little bit, the White Sox did the same thing with a rebuild, and the Bears are the Bears at this point, and now the Bulls are trying to get back into the limelight here. They've had a pretty up and down, inconsistent year that they've been trying to figure out how they're going to proceed next year, and now the Hawks. I mean, they have the third best odds to land the number one pick. They can pick anywhere from first to fifth, I believe, is their. Their parameters here in this upcoming draft.
Yeah. Schwani, what's your take on all this sports expert that you are?
Well, it is sad to see these players go. Taves gave us so much excitement, and you mentioned Anthony Rizzo was part of the 2016 World Series Cubs championship, and these players have meant so much to people over the years. But outside of that, I think it's fine.
That's what I was.
That's what you were waiting
that's
for.
That's what I was searching for.
We wouldn't have that any other way.
I didn't think you were going to take the long way around to get it.
But. I couldn't just go say, I think it's fine, because it is sad to see these players go.
I am, it's like I've said a million times. I mean, I'm not, the sports fan that Andy is and the expert that Andy is, but. I follow, especially when the teams are good.
Yeah.
I'll hop on any bandwagon that's coming down the street.
Yeah, if there's room, jump on board, right?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. I do. And I sure got hooked into the Blackhawks run and their three Stanley Cup championships. And, mm-hmm. of course, when the Cubs made their run, you can't.
Boy, never forget it.
Can't help but get into it all. I'm still all jazzed up by, Michael Jordan and the Bulls.
Yeah.
After all these years, all I need is to see one little clip of something and
get you going.
It takes me right back to the old days again.
Well, now see, there you go. The teams are talking about rebuilding and looking at everything and looking toward the future. So, as I say, I think it's fine.
Yeah, I think it's fine, too.
I think it's okay.
That's your sports analysis this morning
with our senior presenter.
Our senior presenter, Red Schwani. Red Schwani. Tribute to the great Red Motlow this morning.
Oh, my goodness.
The WGN. This could be our weather theme. What a difference a day makes. Oh, brother. Compared to yesterday and what we're going to get today. According to all of the experts, let's dig into that a little bit. Our pal, Bill Snyder, who is Tom Skilling's weather producer extraordinaire. You hear Tom frequently talking about Bill and, how he is his right hand over at WGN, bringing us the latest forecast. And how is Bill Snyder on this gloomy Sunday morning today?
Dean, how are you? Well, I'll tell you, it was a lot better, I think, the last 3 days, just like many of us Chicagoans, huh? Boy, what a streak we had, wasn't it something?
It was crazy.
Yeah.
And record-breaking, I think, right?
We had a record high on Thursday, and we had, the daily double number of the day seemed to be 83. We came off not one, but three consecutive 83-degree highs, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, of course, yesterday. And the 80-degree string actually began on Wednesday. So we came off four straight days. And what's significant about that, Dean, is that is the second longest 80-degree string for this early in the season on record in Chicago.
Yeah.
Only once before, and you got to go back to that infamous warm spell we had back in March of 2012 when we were in Never Neverland, but that was the last time that we had a string of 80s this early in the season. So it was really extraordinary, and what's equally extraordinary is what's about to slap us in the face here in the next 24 hours.
Yeah, well, like the song said, what a difference a day makes.
I know. We haven't reached the bottom yet of this of this, you know, temperature crash that's about to take place. Okay, so we're in the midst of it.
That's what I want to find out exactly. What exactly is going to happen? For some reason, you know, we've had these, you know, few beautiful days. You know, we think it's all over.
I know.
But it's not.
And that's what's remarkable, Dean, is that, you know, if you look and you just look at, sit back and look at the normals, the warmth that we had the last few days is more typical of what we'd see in late June. The high temperature tomorrow is going to be the equivalent of late February. So we're effectively in about 36 hours going from late June warmth or late June level warmth to late February level chill. So, I mean, it's really going to be a jarring slap in the face. And the transition is, we're in the middle of that transition today. So it's gloomy, as you mentioned before. We're in a little bit of a lull in the precipitation right now, but the precipitation is out to our west, and it's going to wash back in here as we go through the rest of the day. So expect the rain showers to pick up here in the next couple of hours or so, and they'll be with us for most of the afternoon and evening. And dare I say that nasty four-letter word, but as we temperatures drop tonight and into tomorrow morning, the rain is likely to mix with and even change over to a period of wet snow, if you can believe that. And that's really something. I checked the records, Dean, and this is really remarkable, but the last time and only time that I could find going back, you know, since our weather records began, where we had snow, measurable snow, within 2 days of an 80-degree temperature at this time of the year, you got to go all the way back to 1978.
Wow.
We had an 83-degree high on March 31st, and on April 2nd, we had 0.2 inches of snow. So it's really rare to have this type of change that we're going to endure here in the next 24 hours. Okay. And it's going to come with a lot of wind, too. So it's not only is it going to be chilly, and we're not going to be used to it because, my gosh, we've been in our shorts and flip-flops and you know, barbecuing and everything the last few days. Yep. But, the cold temperatures are going to be accompanied by 35 to 45-mile-an-hour winds. So essentially, we're going to be waking up tomorrow morning to a wind chill of about 20 degrees with maybe some wet flakes of snow flying in the air. It's really going to be jarring.
Wow. Yeah. So, you know, everybody who put their coats away for the season, you better go searching.
Better go right back in there and grab them out. Exactly. Yeah,
So how much snow might we be looking at now? Are we looking at talking about
measurable
snow?
You know what, Dean? The ground is really warm, especially coming off this remarkable stretch of warm weather. So not only is the ground warm, but the pavement temperatures are warm. So in other words, to get snow to stick in this environment, I mean, you really have to get, the temperature has to drop close to freezing or even a tad below that, and it has to snow heavy enough for the snow to accumulate in these conditions. Now, here in the city or areas close within proximity of the city, you could get a little bit of accumulation on the grassy surfaces, but this is not going to be a big deal where, you know, roads are going to be covered or anything like that. It's just too warm. The atmosphere is too warm. But as you get farther northwest towards, say, McHenry County and DeKalb and Rockford and those areas, you know, you could get a slushy inch or two of accumulation, on the grass or your colder outdoor surfaces. But here close by, I think just the fact that it's going to be falling in the air with, 35-mile-an-hour wind gusts is going to be enough to remind us, wow, what just happened here in the last 48 hours? And that's what's going to happen.
Yeah,
but
that's jarring enough. Are we gonna have any sort of warm-up again? Does it look like we could
Unfortunately, nothing on par with what we just had. As a matter of fact, the overall temperature outlook, moving on through the next couple of weeks, looks pretty chilly. We'll have a little spike the middle of next week, like Wednesday, Thursday time frame, but that's going to bring with it the next chance of showers and thunderstorms. Parts of our area could get back up close to 70 briefly, but it looks like another pretty good slug of cool air is going to come in behind that in time for next weekend. So, I guess the bottom line is it's April. April can be a finicky month. You know, we see a lot of wide swings in our weather during the month of April, and certainly that's going to be we're going to be living through that here in the next couple of days. And, it's interesting too, Dean. I checked and, you might think, oh, well, we've been kind of, put in a false sense of security here with this warm weather. But the fact is beyond this date, just flakes of snow, not measurable, but flakes of snow have occurred in 96 of 137 years. So that's about 70%.
Wow.
Measurable snow, which equates to a tenth of an inch or more, has occurred in about a quarter of those years. So it's not unprecedented to get snow. It's just going to be a shock to our system when you're coming off a stretch of summer like warmth like we've had. So
I know so many people that ran to the home improvement stores and got their little tomato plants and because the weather was nice, they put the stuff in, and I was like, I think it's too early.
Way too early.
Yeah, my rule has always been to wait until Memorial Day, but.
That's a good rule of thumb. I think that, technically, usually I tell people Mother's Day is kind of a benchmark. Once you get to the middle of May, you're pretty safe. But if you're out in the far northwest or western suburbs where they're still prone to seeing a little bit of frost, into May. Yeah, Memorial Day is definitely, we've had frost as late as the, final week of May. I think it was back in 1992 that happened. But so you're right. It's just, we get spoiled with this warmth and we think, oh my gosh, everything's blooming. The trees have really, what a remarkable transformation we've had in our vegetation just in the last week. It just shows what a few warm days will do. But in terms of actual planning, it's way too early.
All right,
definitely.
Well,
that's good advice.
We will keep an eye on the WGN TV. And watch your weather page, and you keep Tom Skilling under control over there.
I do my best, Dean. It's not always it can be a challenge at times, but I will certainly do my best.
Bill, it's always great to talk to you, pal. I look forward to seeing you soon.
You bet, Dean. Always good to talk to you, too. You guys, you take care, and everybody, and have a good day. Try to in this condition.
Thanks, pal. That's Bill Snyder, weather producer, Tom Skilling's right hand over at WGN-TV. And now at 10:39, Dean Richards Sunday Morning on WGN. I have to acknowledge today the closing of the longest-running show on Broadway. Tonight will be the final performance for Andrew Lloyd Webber's Phantom of the Opera, closing after more than 35 years at the Majestic Theater in New York. 14,000 performances, 20 million people have gone to see the show. It's grossed $1.3 billion and putting 6,500 people to work. 400 of those are actors. A little later on, we'll salute Phantom of the Opera. But I wanted to welcome in a friend of the show who is starring over at the Cabaret Zazu at the Cambria Theater, who, interestingly, has also been performing there for 35 years.
It just seems like it, Dean.
Congratulations.
Thank you,
Dean. Congratulations. Frank Ferrante is here, who plays Forte in the show, and just extended again. Until August, I think I read, right?
Yeah, it's exciting. It was supposed to close this week, but they're keeping me through the end of August. So, again, I'll be camping here overnight, as I do, waiting for you to show up in the morning.
He's always outside the WGN building when I come in.
That's right.
Can I be on the show today?
Yes.
Can I come on today?
So that's it.
No,
so
it's Frank, you've already been on four other shows on WGN this week.
But this is the show.
Well, we
just say it.
We're just happy that you're here.
I'm happy to
be
here,
too. It's always a delight to see you. I think this is the first time that you've come on the show, and you've been here multiple times, not in costume.
That is true. Today I'm wearing, I thought it was the weather. I'm from California, and I came wearing my Palm Springs outfit.
You do look very Palm Springs.
I look like a walking creamsicle, which was my nickname in high school. I'm wearing my salmon Palm Springs coat,
very nice.
Yeah, my cream colored khakis. Yep. I'm not wearing socks. I am not wearing socks.
Are you taking your shoes off?
I am. But I'll tell you why.
Taking your shoes off.
These were Hal Holbrook's shoes of Mark Twain Tonight.
Is that right?
From Carol and Beverly Hills. Wow. I got all of his hand-me-downs. It's true story.
Very nice.
Yeah, still smells like
smells like Hal Holbrook.
It's the scent of legend. Wow. Uday Hal.
You are the only guest that I've ever had here in my many years on WGN who has taken off his shoes every time that he's come into the studio.
I feel comfortable here with you.
Apparently you do.
So that's it. So, yeah, absolutely. Extension and today.
This is very cool.
Yeah.
I'm very excited for you.
Me too.
How with this show, Cabaret Zazoo, and the previous show, Teatro Zanzani, for how long does that make? A couple of years?
We started
three years in Chicago?
Yeah, 2019, I opened that venue in Teatro Zanzani.
Right before the pandemic, right?
Yeah, and then the pandemic kept us out of business for a year and a half, and I reopened that tent with Zanzani in 2021. We were the first show to do it. I was the first actor to welcome back Chicago audience. It was very honored. And now we opened this new rebranded Cirque variety show in September, and today at noon, Dean, at noon.
Yes.
At the noon performance, Dean.
Yeah, at 12 o'clock, you mean?
That too, Dean.
Yes.
We are celebrating our 175th performance.
Wow.
So here it is. There's a breaking story.
Congratulations
Thank
to you.
You. Thank you.
Here's the thing that I like. I've seen the show several times. It's a different every time you see it.
It is.
Even if you've gone to see the show, if you go back, you take friends, family, whatever, you got to see the show. I recommend the show all the time to people. It's always a little bit different.
We had a good friend of yours. Was it Aaron Ivory? Who was that?
Aaron Ivory
was at the show.
From WGN TV.
And she had a great time.
Yeah.
Well, it's crazy. Last night, a Saturday night show, which is generally crazier than most, they were just going nuts. And my stuff is interactive. I bring people on stage and have a field day with them. And so the show is different because I have a different cast to work with, which is the audience. So, yes, it's exhilarating. I was high after, not literally, but adrenaline.
It has
adrenalized after the show.
I after the show, you greet people after the show. I think that part of that, it seems like, is like to bring you back down to earth because your adrenaline is running so high after performing for a couple of hours.
Yeah, it's a process. I'm up to about 2 a.m. after the show. But after the show last night, I get my cocktail after the show in the bar, which is beautiful. You've seen it.
Yeah.
And last night I had a little beer, and I sat there as people exited. They don't recognize me out of costume and makeup, but a couple did, and that was great, and the hugs and the whole thing. Uh-huh. But it is part of the process of kind of just debriefing and relaxing and decompressing. It's fun.
So I am so excited for you and so curious to see what you're going to be doing next, because you are throwing out the first pitch. at the White Sox game on which day?
This Wednesday at 1:10 p.m. Against the Phillies, White Sox-Phillies.
How about that?
And this is irony.
How traumatic is this experience
I've been
you?
Practicing for several days on the 12th floor of the Cambria Hotel where Cabaret Zazoo is. It's this huge storage space. It was an old Mason's gatherings room. And so I've had a mat up there with a little square, and I've been throwing, pitching these balls. And the irony is that I was the guy in right field picking daisies and gazing into the clouds, making puppets by day and doing paint by numbers. And my brothers were the athletes. My brother Tony, who lives in Arlington Heights for 25 years. My brother John. My dad was a coach. And I was awful because I could care less.
Right.
So there's something quite poetic about all of this.
Right. Unless you wanted a show tune sung in right field.
I would like that.
Then he's your man for this.
Yes, I can break into the entire score of Phantom of the Opera.
But you're gonna step out onto the pitcher's mound.
Yes.
You are going to throw out the first pitch.
Yes.
It's traumatic.
Yeah, you've done it.
I've done it. I've done it at Wrigley Field.
Yeah.
It's terrifying.
Yeah.
I did like you did. I practiced.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't stink up the joint. I did okay.
Right. That's all I wanted to do.
I didn't want to throw it into the ground.
That's it.
I didn't want to embarrass myself, and I did okay when I did.
Well, it becomes more than embarrassing yourself. In your case, it's like embarrassing WGN, all of the broadcasting industry. For me, it's like my show, my family, stage actors.
Right.
He can't throw a ball, so I've been like what I do for everything. I try to creatively visualize that ball hitting that mitt. So we'll see. We'll think about.
You'll be fine.
Yeah,
you'll be fine.
It'll be fun.
Yeah, you'll be fine. So, all right, so we're going to do something a little different here today. We're chatting with Frank, and he tells me you have to hear this performer friend of mine who's going to be coming to Chicago. And I said, well, why don't you come on the show and you can introduce her? Mm-hmm. This is like, you know, Arthur Godfrey bringing somebody on, you know, to present a new talent.
You know, we don't get enough Arthur Godfrey references these days. Ding, you just dated both of us.
Well,
and somebody has to.
Most people who listen to this show completely understand who Arthur Godfrey is. We'll meet this person when we come right back. Our weekend theater segment this week, sponsored by Chicago Shakespeare's Comedy of Errors. And our pal Frank Ferrante is here from Cabaret Zazu. Now extended until August. You want a fantastic show that is music and acrobatics and improvisational comedy and just a little of everything. And a pretty nice dinner to go on top of it. Good old-fashioned dinner theater. Mm-hmm. That's Frank's show, and we'll tell you how to get tickets for that in a couple of minutes. Frank, you know, has his tentacles out everywhere in show business, and has a friend who's going to be appearing at the Den Theater this coming Thursday. Isn't that the day you're throwing out the opening pitch?
No, that's Wednesday.
Oh,
right?
That's
day
Wednesday.
Before,
okay.
The 19th.
Oh, that's Wednesday. Yeah. Okay. So the next day, after Frank dazzles Major League Baseball with his opening pitch.
Oh, Dean.
I just want you to think of me when you're on that pitcher spot.
Oh, my. Dean?
I want you to... So the following day... Mm-hmm. An incredible performer is going to be here in Chicago at the Den Theater. Mm-hmm. And why don't you take it from here?
Well, you know, I think I know funny. I've been doing yesterday's World Circus Day, which is I've been in the circus for 22 years. I've been in the theater for 38. And my whole life has been doing interactive comedy and humor-based material. And during the pandemic, I was on social media and I kept seeing these videos pop up, Dean, of Broadway Barbara Dixon, and I'd never laughed so hard. And, you know, as a performer, we're all competitive. We don't like to say this is the funniest person or that person's funnier than I am. This person is as funny as it gets. And Barbara Dixon is a diva, a theatrical diva in the vein of a Patti LuPone or a Lane Stritch, larger than life. Her alter ego is the great Lea Sprecher, who is just facile, sings, dances, does jokes, and she has this following of hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people on social media. I've got 8, and I think you're one of them, Dean.
I am.
Okay.
I'm actually on there 2 or 3 times.
That's you, Dean.
Under different names.
That was you.
Yeah.
You're also Missy Elliott, it turns out, on my...
I am.
Yes, but anyway, I am such a fan, and I won't be able to see it Thursday, so... I think this is a big Chicago debut, and this is our first WGN experience, yes. And it's only fitting that it's with you, Dean Richards, and so if you want a big laugh, it's Broadway Barbara Dixon.
Leah, I'm wondering if he's even going to let you get a word in edgewise here. Good morning.
I didn't realize I was here already. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, Frank. Hi, Dean.
Hi, Leah.
Thank you for the glowing intro. I'm happy to be here.
So how do you describe your show? I was gonna play some audio. Frank sent me some links to, you know, hear some of what you do, and it is hilarious, but it's a little too R-rated hilarious for us to share on the air here this morning.
Yeah.
So how do...
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say go ahead and, you know, explain, you know, tell us what you do, you know, if there's a way to give us a little... You know, family-oriented sampling of it, that would be great.
Sure. Well, as Frank said, it's a Broadway diva in the vein of Patti LuPone, Elaine Stritch, except the difference with Barbara is that nobody really knows her, and she's been at it for decades. She's brushed elbows with all kinds of stars, and yet they don't know her name. So the show really is her proving that she has all the goods. So it's a full song and dance show. This time in Chicago, I have my Barbara's son accompanying her on the piano. But I usually have dancers as well. But the dancers were double booked, so they're now dead to me.
Those dancers will just always disappoint you. no matter what.
That's right.
So are you doing original songs? Are you doing like parody songs?
No, they're spins on classic Broadway songs. So I'll do anywhere from an Eminem song to Sondheim, everything in between, but with Barbara's twist and stories throughout.
That sounds fantastic. And I think you're in New York right now performing, right?
I am in New York, yes. Yes, at the Soho Playhouse for a couple more nights.
Yeah, very, very nice. And now, have you performed here in Chicago before?
I did do one night last year at Davenport, but this is my grand reentrance into Chicago.
Right. Now, has Frank been stalking you? He mentioned that he found you on social media.
yes. Has he been? He's one of my biggest stalkers, yeah. And yet he's a helpful stalker.
Yes, yes.
So that's good.
Yeah. That's a good point. But
I just wondered if there was a restraining order that's been issued yet.
Well, it's coming along there. We're getting close. But for Leah, it's remarkable is that you would not recognize. You know, Leah channels this beautiful invention, and as did Pee Wee Herman, as did Dame Edna, as did Mike Myers doing Austin Powers. This you would not the talent, the transformation is complete, and you sit there and you laugh and you laugh. And you believe everything, and she's real. Barbara's real, and I love her.
Yeah.
Well, did you want me to tell Barbara to come on?
Yeah,
I would love to meet Barbara.
All right, hold on a sec.
To get a chance.
Barbara.
Oh, Barbara's in the next room. Apparently.
Oh my,
Barbara's in the next room.
hello. Is this Dean?
Barbara.
Hello.
Barbara.
Yes, I'm thrilled to be making my radio debut in Chicago.
We are thrilled. You can't say that enough, by the way. We are thrilled to have you making your Chicago radio debut with us here today. What can we expect when you come to the Den Theater this coming Thursday?
Well, my darling, you are going to expect an explosive song and dance extravaganza full of showbiz tales from my life. I talk about my stint in rehab, my late great husband, you know, all the funny stuff we cover.
So can you give us just a little sampling? I know you don't want to give away too much, but can you just give us a tiny little sampling of the part of the show?
You want me to sing a little bit for you?
Sure.
All right, here we go. Let me entertain you. Let me make you smile. I was the original singing voice for E.T. Let me do a few tricks. I'm holding in some new tricks. I need to keep it PG, though, so I can't really go into too much more there.
Yeah, I know. I realized you were about to hit that wall, so
very quickly. But
I appreciate the discretion.
There's a lot of clean stuff, and you know, children have come to the show, and a lot just goes over their heads. So, if you ask me, I think it's all ages.
So, Broadway Barbara at the Den Theater this coming Thursday night. Come and check out the show. It's a pleasure to meet you, Barbara. Thank you so much.
Oh, it's fabulous for you to meet me. Yes. Thank you so much for it.
We appreciate that.
I'll see you soon.
Very good. And Frank, thank you for introducing us.
It's my pleasure.
I think your friend.
The three of us would make a great couple.
Congratulations on your anniversary show today.
Thank you, sir.
And for your extension until August, go to BroadwayInChicago.com and you can get more information on Cabaret Zazu to see Frank in his full glory over there. And don't forget, this coming Wednesday, someone's going to be throwing out the first pitch.
Oh, the pressure's on. Dean!
Guaranteed right field. Go get him, slugger!
Come on now.
Go get him, slugger.
Take me out to the ball game.
I've been wanting to go to Kalamazoo, Michigan for quite a while.
You got a gal in Kalamazoo?
I got a gal in Kalamazoo.
From Walla Walla, Washington to Kalamazoo. It's a beautiful day for a ball game.
That's right. That's part of that. Look at us. Yeah. Look at us with all the old-timey songs.
And before we go any further, now that we are beginning the third hour of the program this morning, ladies and gentlemen,
the broadcast,
I offer you our senior presenter, Sir Dean Richards.
This is where I walk down the aisle of the WGN building.
Wearing your tux, wearing your morning suit.
My robes. My ceremonial robes.
With your scepter in hand.
And when I say ceremonial robe, I mean my bathrobe. We've had this theme here today because I told Schwani we're going to be doing the show from the coronation.
Yeah. Does King Charles know of this yet?
Oh yeah, he's the one. He's the one that called me.
You're okay. You're just on a. You can call him Chuck, right?
That'll tell you how many people have turned him down to appear in the coronation.
Charlie.
Yeah, when we wind up, being part of that, you know that like Elton John turned him down.
Really?
Elton John turned him down?
Adele turned him down?
No!
Ed Sheeran turned him down?
Huh.
Oh, you're making this up.
No, true. Katy Perry is going to perform, and Lionel Richie is going to perform, and opera star Andrea Bocelli is going to perform, and a bunch of English bands.
Mm-hmm.
But some of the biggest names in the world said, sorry, we're busy.
Wow. Elton's probably saying, well, I'm retired now.
Well, he's saying a schedule conflict.
A schedule conflict.
Schedule. They're all saying
never mind the coronation conflict. Of King Charles.
It's the coronation of a king. Come on.
Yeah. This is the first time this has happened in our lifetime. That's yours
true.
And mine,
that's
at least.
True. Yep.
Because
can't wait. I can't wait to go.
Okay. So I guess we're going. Then.
We're going.
Let's go.
I've got to get my passport in order.
Be ashamed if you got taken
away. I couldn't be able to go.
Be ashamed if you got taken away by the TSA.
Yes, it would be.
We wouldn't laugh too hard for too long.
No, I wouldn't be laughing.
What was I going to bring? Oh, I wanted to take a moment to wish all celebrating the Eastern Orthodox Easter today. A very happy Easter, Greek Easter in my family. But, there are Russian Orthodox and Ukrainian Orthodox and Serbian Orthodox, and the list goes on and on. Many people celebrating today. Not the greatest day to roast a lamb out in the front yard, but still a pretty nice day.
Yeah, well, again, happy Easter to all.
We used to do that back in the day. We haven't done it in a long time. But we used to get a whole lamb. Put it on a spit, and you sit there all day and turn the lamb.
That's an all day event.
It's an all day event. You know, you sit there and you drink ouzo, and basically you get drunk while you roast the lamb.
I was going to mention that there may be a little of that happening there, especially if it's an all day event.
It happens. You don't want it to happen, but it happens.
You don't want it to happen?
No. Well, you sort of do want it to happen. But, that's the old... I'm sure a lot of people are going to be doing it today. We just haven't done it in our family in a long time. But happy Easter to everyone celebrating for today. Coming up in just a moment, the legendary Carol Burnett talks about her amazing career as she is about to turn 90 years old. One of the most iconic theme songs of all time. And why not? The Carol Burnett Show was so much a part of our lives growing up. It was Saturday evening appointment television for which Carol won 6 Primetime Emmy Awards over her illustrious career. A Tony Award, a Grammy Award, 7 Golden Globe Awards, a Presidential Medal of Freedom, the Mark Twain Prize for American Humor, the Screen Actors Guild Lifetime Achievement Award. I mean, she has done it all in her career. An actress, a comedian, a singer, a writer, an amazing career. And even more amazing than that is that Carol Burnett is about to turn 90 years old. April 26th, Carol will turn 90. If you've seen her doing some television appearances lately, you can see that she looks fantastic. You know, we wanted to celebrate her as well for all of the contributions. 1 year ago, it was almost 1 year ago to the day, we had Carol here on the show with us. It was her first appearance here in Chicago after the pandemic. And we reminisced about the old show and all that she had been up to. The legendary Carol Burnett.
Well, I just finished doing four shows earlier this month. In one, because it was 2 years for all of these venues that had been postponed, so the audience had held onto their tickets for 2 years. And this one woman wow. raised her hand, and she said, "I bought two tickets 2 years ago for my 101-year-old mother." And I said, "Oh, that's so sweet." And she said, "And we're here tonight." She was 103.
Holy smokes. Wow. That's amazing.
I'm expecting her to say, "Oh, and she passed away," you know, and all.
Right.
She's still there at 103. Right. And she stood up and took a bow. The audience went crazy.
How about that? Well, you know, those Carol Burnett Show fans, they're loyal. They're when they have tickets, they're not going to go anywhere.
I guess not. But
that's amazing. What kind of reception, Carol, have you been getting now that you're back on the road and doing these shows around the country? I would think that after the pandemic and all that the world has been going through and is going through, a night of comedy with a longtime friend has got to be such a welcome event in their lives.
The audience is, I mean, they've been wonderful. And pretty much the way they have always been, except with the exception that now I'm getting the age group now goes from maybe 7 years old up to 99 or 103.
103. We now can verify 103, right?
Yeah. Well, not too long ago, I was doing one of these, and you know. It's really laughter and reflection where the audience asks the question. So it's a Q&A, you know. So I don't do stand-up because the audience is my partner. And so this one time I called on this little boy. You know, it's all random. And he raised his hand, and I said, "What's your name?" And he said, "Andrew." And I said, "How old are you, Andrew?" And he said, 9. And I said, "And you know who I am?" And there was a pause, and he said, "Surprisingly, yes."
That's amazing. It's amazing, but it's not really amazing to me because your show, your comedy is really, it's timeless.
Well, thank you. It's funny is funny, and we never, very seldom were topical. You know, we didn't do that much about what was going on with the news or anything. We just, we were a throwback to vaudeville. We wanted to just do funny shows. And I dare anybody to look at Tim and Harvey doing the dentist sketch and not lose it, because it's one of the funniest bits of comedy ever. And that's over 45 years old.
Yeah. It's amazing. I was watching a rerun the other day, and it was a sketch that you had all done, which you and Tim were husband and wife, Tim Conway. Lyle Wagner was a veterinarian who was supposed to give a little dog an injection, but instead accidentally gives it to Tim Conway, and he takes on the attributes of a dog. Right. I mean, that's the premise, and take it from there with you and Tim Conway. I was crying laughing, even though I had seen it a million times.
Of course, it was he really, he nailed it, you know. And lots of times we would tape two shows on a Friday in front of two different audiences. The first show, was what we call the dress rehearsal, but we taped it. And Tim would do the sketches the way we'd rehearse them, as we used to say, to the ink. And then on the second show, once he knew that the first show had been taped and it's in the can for safety, then he would go off script. And we would let him. I would let him, you know, because it was pure gold. And I would say 90% of the time we would use what he did on the second show. You know, he could go all this. There might be a 4-minute sketch, and he would stretch it to 8 minutes. You know, but and it would, and we would keep it in, and because you know that was people waited for him to do that. You know, they looked forward to it, and I learned something many years ago when I was what we call second banana on the old Gary Moore show. I don't know how many of your listeners remember that.
Yeah. But oh, I remember it fondly.
Garrett would, his name was, he was a star, but Durward Kirby was a second banana, and I was, and Marion Lorne, and we would be reading the script on a Monday, and Gary might have a joke or a punchline or something, and he'd look up, and he'd say, you know what, give this joke to Durward or give it to Carol. They can say it funnier than I can.
I think about that when I watch your old shows, even though it's your name on the show, how generous you were letting everyone around you be funny. Yeah.
Right. Well, that only makes the show better. I always, my name was on it, but it was a true rep company. There was many times I would be supporting Harvey or Vicky, or then Vicky would be supporting Tim, or Tim would be supporting Harvey. And that only made the show better because I wanted everybody to score a touchdown. And they did. We would turn it over. I wouldn't let Vicky have it, you know, have the brunt of the thing, and Tim and Harvey. And then they would support me. So it was a... It was a true, true rep company.
Yeah, and, you know, which kind of also brings me to the subject of what an enormous undertaking putting on the Carol Burnett Show must have been every week. It was like a different Broadway show every single week with the musical numbers and the costumes and this array of guests that you had, coming on the program. There is nothing like it anymore.
No, it's too bad. Well, actually, I wanted that. I wanted it to be a musical comedy review every week. And we also, most of us coming from live television, I didn't want the live studio audience sitting there for hours while we took our time changing clothes or scenery or anything. I was adamant about doing it as close to being a live show as possible. And so by doing that, our studio audience was there maybe for 2 hours at the most. So that would be the time you would spend watching a Broadway show. And I remember I used to bet the crew that I could do a skin-out costume change faster than they could move a couch across the stage. Because I've done some guest shots on sitcoms that you know, it's maybe 21 minute, 22 minutes of actual show, and it take maybe 4 or 5 hours to do it. Well, that's crazy. What are they doing, making a movie? I mean, when I worked with Lucy, you know, when she had not I Love Lucy, but the later shows, she did it just like a live show. Yeah. We'd be out of there once we started taping in front of an audience. We'd be out of there no later than maybe 30 or 40 minutes. We'd be gone, you know, and it was done. It was in the can, and it had that live spontaneity. The audience wasn't bored. you know, and that's the way we did my show.
Yeah, she talks more about her mentor, Lucille Ball.
The first time I met her, I was in an off-Broadway show called Once Upon a Mattress, and she came to see me in the show. I was more nervous knowing she was in the audience than I was opening night with all the critics, you know. And she came backstage, yeah, and she called me. She was 22 years older than me, and she said, "Kid, if you ever need me for anything, give me a call." So about four or five years later, I was doing well, and CBS had offered me an hour-long special if I could get a major guest star. And the producer said, "Well, you got to call Lucy." And I was embarrassed. I said, "Well, I don't want to bother her." And, you know, he said, "Well, all she can do is say no." You know, she did say, "Give me a call if you ever need me." So I got up the nerve and I called her office. She came on the phone right away. "Hey, kid, you're doing great. What's happening?" And I flumpered around and I was nervous and stuttering and everything. And I said, "Well, I know you're busy," but then she said, "What is it?" And I said, I'm going to be doing this special for CBS. And she interrupted me and she said, "When do you need me?" That was it.
Wow. And now it's interesting to watch people like Amy Poehler and Jane Lynch and this whole generation of actresses, comedic actresses who worship you in the same way, deservedly so. That must be gratifying to you.
Well, it's very sweet. And what's nice, I'm just thrilled that so many women have their own production companies, and they're writers, and they're the head of, you know, of their company, and they're running it, and you know, they've pretty much, not quite yet, but shattered the glass ceiling.
Many of those women that Carol is talking about will be with her on her 90th birthday special. It'll be on NBC on April 26th. 7 p.m. Central Time. We'll have more with my conversation with Carol Burnett when we come right back. Today, paying tribute to the great Carol Burnett, celebrating her 90th birthday on April 26th. Can't believe she's 90 years old. We talked with her a year ago. I mean, you know, during the pandemic, she had several shows scheduled in the Chicago area, each one canceled during the lockdown. So it was a year ago that she was able to come out and fulfill those shows and do those shows. And we were lucky enough to be at them, to go backstage, to talk with her. And she was nice enough to spend quite a bit of time with us talking from her home in California on the phone about the good old days and all those good old memories. One of the shows that we talked about was one in which she performed with the Jackson 5. And during that performance, an earthquake took place in Southern California. And it was all captured on tape. And she remembered it well.
Well, I can't remember exactly what I said, but I remember the audience went, "Ooh," you know, and there was a reaction. And you could see the reaction of people on, you know, the Jackson 5 and also some of our other dancers when we were doing the thing where I was a school teacher. And I remember I kept going, and I said something like, "You see what happens when you don't pay attention, the earth moves," or I said something like that. but we kept going.
Yeah. Cracked everybody up and just kept right on going like the pro that you were. They remembered it fondly as well. They remembered what a great week that was for them. Wow. And talk to me about the kindness that you showed them, how nice you were behind the scenes to them during that week in which they were featured on your show.
They were terrific, and you know, I'm very flattered by that compliment, but why not be nice? I mean, again, you know, one of the nicest people I ever knew in my life was Gary Moore, working with him and how he conducted himself around people in the show. But it wasn't just being nice, you know, because you had a show. He was nice off camera, too. And I just, why not be nice?
Right. It seems funny to get a special accolade for doing something so normal, right? You had such an array of guests on your show. Are there ones that stood out in your mind? I know you had Jim Nabors on the show all the time.
Oh, yeah.
It was a tradition for him to help kick off your seasons. But who are some of the other special guests with whom you were so happy to work?
The first person we ever signed, she wasn't on the first show, but she was the first person we asked to be on the show, and it hadn't started yet, was Bernadette Peters. She was 19 or 20 at the time, and we had Bernadette on quite often. Another favorite was Steve Lawrence, because not only could he sing up a storm, he was hysterically funny in all the sketches. He was a brilliant comedic actor. I remember when our show went into syndication, and it was been just a half hour, and all the musical numbers had been cut. So it was just a half hour of the sketches. And Steve said he and his wife, Edie Gourmet, were in an airport one day, and these teenage girls ran up to him and said, "Hey, you're that funny guy in the Burnett Show." they didn't realize that he could sing, you know, that he was a singer. Another one was Ken Berry. Ken Berry was a brilliant comedian and, hello, one of the greatest song and dance men you'd ever want to meet. I remember when we did a takeoff on a Fred and Ginger movie, and he was acting like Fred Astaire. He was absolutely brilliant, and we heard from Fred Astaire complimenting Ken Berry on his dancing and singing and acting.
Talk to me a little bit about what qualities you thought Betty White exhibited for the world. You know, in her passing this past New Year's Eve, everybody, talk about somebody who had appeal from age 7 to 103. Everybody loved Betty White. What are those qualities that she had that made her so beloved her entire career, do you think?
I don't know. She exuded kindness, and she was bawdy, you know, which in a very, how can you say it, bawdy in a clean way? You just loved it when she would come on to the guys. You know, she was so funny that way. And she had great comedy chops. You know, when you think of her at first on Mary's show, the Golden Girls, and doing our show, she was always funny. And I don't know, there are people, when you see them on the screen, you feel like you know them. And I think people felt like they knew Betty.
Talk to Carol about is what she did during her time during the pandemic.
Well, I live in Santa Barbara, and my husband and I have a home here. And, you know, we had a little kind of a Zen garden on our property. So we were able to have people come over, and we'd be outside, and they'd be more than 6 feet away. so we could visit with our neighbors. And we would visit. We would have maybe a cocktail and some hors d'oeuvres and everything, you know, and just sit when the weather was right, you know, because we didn't go inside with anybody. And we keep busy with our crossword puzzles. I watched a lot of movies. And we'd go for walks, you know, around the neighborhood. And that was it, you know. And so in a way, it was just kind of going away on a vacation, but you're in your own home.
Right. And you didn't know when the vacation was going to end.
Right. We have a pet that we love, and so, you know, but again, we would see friends, and it would be, as I say, outside, and you know, just distancing. So, but we could visit, you know, and that was good. That helped us. And safely, I just have to say, recently I just got the fourth vaccination. I got the booster.
Oh, good. Very good.
The latest. Good. Yeah, the latest booster. I just got it last Friday.
Latest and greatest, yeah. So you'll be coming into the Chicago Theater fully vaxxed and boosted.
Absolutely. And what I do, too, just before I leave, I test, you know, make sure that I'm negative, you know, to make sure all of that. And all the people around me, my stage manager, you know, they test, too, and they're vaxxed. So we're still very, very careful.
I wonder if during the pandemic, you know, you were being approached about new projects, working on new projects. Are there things that are going to be coming up that in which we'll see Carol Burnett starring?
Well, there is, but I'm sworn to secrecy. I did a guest shot on a television series, and it will be on soon, but I was like, nobody wanted me to say what I was doing, so I can't say.
I understand.
But I
understand.
Had a great time. Yeah,
I understand. It's one of those things, ladies and gentlemen, that if she told me, she'd have to kill me. So you know, we'll just leave it. We'll just keep our ears peeled for.
No, I would be willing to tell, but the producers, they say, please don't say anything. So
no, I understand. Anyway. I completely understand. Yeah. I'm glad to hear that we'll be seeing you in something, whatever it is, and we'll learn about that.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you, it's not really the kind of comedy that you do, but I wonder, as just an observer of comedy through the years, comedy has just really come under fire lately for the kind of material that some comedians do that gets a bad reaction, the kind of reaction that it's getting, in which some people go up on stages if they don't like what the comedian's saying. Some comedians get fired, you know, in this cancel culture world in which we're living. Is this a tough time to be a comedian, do you think?
Well, I'm not one of those. I'm not a stand-up, so I don't do that. But I think it's terrible that comedians, I remember Don Rickles. My goodness, that was his whole act, was insulting him. People, you know, okay, don't take it so seriously. That's my view, you know. Yeah. And so I feel sorry for the stand-ups who are worried now. If they say something, is somebody going to shoot them? You know, what's going on here? It's crazy.
Right.
It's absolutely
crazy. lose their jobs and not get bookings. They dumb down their comedy to, you know, to make it you know, more generic. And I just feel like comedy suffers as a result.
Yeah.
Because comedians have always pushed the envelope.
We're talking about stand-up. But then you think, you know, about edgy, you know, for sitcoms or this and that. For that, I'm not for it when they get too edgy, because so many times you think that one of these sitcoms is written by teenage boys in a locker room.
Yeah.
You know, they're scatological for no good reason except to get a laugh. When you look at it today, you look at All in the Family, look at Dick Van Dyke's show, Mary Tyler Moore, Bob Newhart. Those were classy shows and funny as hell. And they didn't stoop to being, quote, edgy, you know. Yeah. I like edgy if it's for a good, if it's really funny. But to be just gratuitous, I'm just bored with it, and I don't watch it.
That's our conversation with Carol Burnett from a year ago, about 1 year ago today. She joined us just ahead of an appearance at the Chicago Theater. The secret TV project that she was talking about in that interview had not yet been on the air. Now it has been. She had a fantastic role in Bob Odenkirk's Better Call Saul. Bob Odenkirk will be among the people that will be joining Carol Burnett in her 90th anniversary birthday special. That'll be on NBC on April 26th, 90 years old. She talked about Bernadette Peters being among her very first guests on her old variety show. Bernadette Peters will be on that special that's coming up. Julie Andrews, her longtime friend, will be part of that special. Jane Lynch, Amy Poehler. She's got people from every generation who are admirers and fans who will be joining to pay tribute to Carol Burnett on her 90th birthday. And I'm glad we could go back to the archives and share that interview with you here today. And one more note on Carol Burnett when we come back from the break.
Well, I wish the weather was still beautiful like it was yesterday.
But we all do.
Just hearing your story of all the craziness that went on last night on Michigan Avenue, right?
Yes, Michigan Avenue and downtown. Two people shot on Washington, on East Washington, just a couple blocks away from Millennium Park. Yeah. Several hundred down there. And that's the second night in a row in Chicago where there was a large disturbance like that. There was one around 31st Street on Friday.
Because of the nice weather, right?
Because of the nice weather, largely.
That's one of the downsides of the beautiful weather. Everybody is out, and trouble ensues. So, in a way, I'm not terribly sad that it's going to be kind of rainy and snowy to keep the trouble down.
All was calm when I was going into work this morning. As a matter of fact, did drive right by Millennium Park, and things were... there was really no one out to speak of, but that was not the case a few hours earlier. And then we're also following this story out of Alabama, yet another terrible incident here. Four people killed at a birthday party for a 16-year-old.
Yeah, that's horrible. That's horrible. I don't know what the answer is. I mean, we can talk about it till we're blue in the face. I don't know exactly what the answer is to stop all this madness. I mean, there's just a certain mindset, it seems to me, that the answer seems to be going to guns immediately. And there needs to be some... I was talking with a friend of mine who is a social worker. Who said she thinks there needs to be mandatory conflict resolution training. That much of this violence that's going on is because when a conflict occurs, the natural way to resolve it for many people is violence.
Whether it's a fight or worse with a gun.
Regardless of domestic violence or, the smallest thing can erupt into something quite violent and deadly, usually with a gun, as we've been hearing. That I thought this was a very interesting point that I never really hear people talking about. That we should be teaching conflict resolution in schools.
Yeah, and the maybe, way we teach maybe in elementary school.
Yeah.
As early as fifth or sixth grade or something like that.
Yeah, that we learn how to, fix these issues.
Yeah, yeah.
Are you surprised that I talk about serious things with my friends?
No, because...
But it's not always Three Stooges.
Right. because we've had serious conversations, on and off the air, you and I, over the years. So, no, that doesn't surprise me.
Yeah.
And you should have, because there's so much of this going on everywhere. And I was just telling Ron Brown here in the newsroom, it can be very difficult to balance a newscast with, reporting about shootings across the country and the violence here and around the Midwest.
Yeah, it starts to be a crime blotter after a while.
Yeah.
All you're reporting on are these horrible stories.
Which is why I used a story on the super bloom, the flowers in California, at the end of the newscast.
Well, I was wondering about that. I was going to, I don't want to criticize you, but, for the whole show, you didn't do a whole story about the super blooms.
Finally waited until 12 noon.
Did you do one?
Yes.
Not that I wasn't hanging on your every word.
No, not that you're right. Yes, I did. And get online and look at the pictures. They're beautiful.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. This happens kind of unpredictably out in the west and in the southwest. They've had enough moisture for a change out there, and then all of a sudden, the dormant seeds come to life. Very pretty.
What's that sound again?
Ladies and gentlemen, the sound of dormant seeds coming to life. Who says we're not educational around here? Going strong, having some fun. I'm glad that you enjoy it, too. Thank you so much for all the very, very nice emails and texts. Enjoy starting their Sunday morning with us. All of our little nonsense that we put on here for you every Sunday morning. I can imagine how fantastic a lot of kitchens are smelling this morning, getting ready for the Eastern Orthodox feasts that will take place today. I know, my Greek family, the Greek Easter, it's the breaking of the fast. For Lent, where people, the faithful have gone meatless for the last 40 days. So it is a carnivore extravaganza today, usually with lamb. Lambs are cooking all over the place, and a lot of the traditional foods and pastries and breads. So there'll be some pretty good feasting today. I hope you have some good feast regardless. We're going to get into our food time segment. A lot of people, boy, did we ever tap into a nerve with our cooking segment that we did this past Wednesday. I did a segment on sandwiches, just, some famous people's favorite sandwiches. We did Oprah's favorite sandwich, which was turkey and avocado and tomato and a variety of cheeses on there on a a crusty Italian bread. And then I did them on a panini press. I just thought they would be a little tastier that way. And it was a good sandwich. But the sandwich that got the rave reviews, Stanley Tucci's favorite sandwich. And I'll tell you what that sandwich is when we start our food time segment right after 12:30. And we'll get into another thing that I'm going to be doing on TV this coming week, this coming Wednesday, cooking with asparagus. Is there any more springtime food than asparagus? I mean, it's everywhere. It's fairly inexpensive right now. I like the big, thick stalks myself. Some people like the little, young, thin ones. But I like to grill them. And it's hard to grill those little thin ones. They burn up pretty quick. So the thicker ones are just a little bit more forgiving. So I'm going to give you a couple of recipes that I found that I might be doing on TV this coming Wednesday. And I want to get some of your uses of asparagus, what you do with it, that I might cook with on TV this week. So that's all going to be coming up after 12:30. So one of the big entertainment stories today, really, is the curtain coming down on the longest-running show in Broadway history. After 35 years, believe it or not, Phantom of the Opera is closing on Broadway. And that comes to 14,000 shows since it opened in January of 1988 at the Majestic Theater in New York. More than 20 million people have gone to see that show since it first opened, grossing $1.3 billion. Isn't that astounding that a show should be running that long on Broadway? It's amazing. 6,500 people have been employed by the production over the years. 400 of those have been actors. It's Andrew Lloyd Webber's classic show that have yielded so many amazing and beautiful songs. I just wanted to pay tribute to Phantom of the Opera that is closing tonight. Tonight will be the final performance on Broadway. And I wanted to just pay tribute with sort of the title song to the show. This is Andrew Lloyd Webber's Phantom of the Opera with the great Sarah Brightman. Yeah, the famous chandelier scene, a signature piece of the legendary Phantom of the Opera, closing on Broadway tonight after his final performance after 35 years. And just, I was struggling to pick which song I was going to play for you today to pay tribute to the song, because there are so many good songs from Phantom of the Opera, That's All I Ask of You, and the Music of the Night is, you know, signature songs. There are so many from that are some, you know, theater legend. It reminds me when I hear songs from Phantom of the Opera and think about the many times that I've seen it here in Chicago. It reminds me of the great Roy Leonard, you know, who preceded us covering entertainment here on WGN, who was such a fan of Andrew Lloyd Webber shows and, you know, bringing this show. I mean, it was Roy who introduced us to Phantom of the Opera when it debuted 35 years ago. You know, it was Roy doing all of that. So we say goodbye to a classic show on Broadway. For now, anyway, everything is often reborn on Broadway, as was West Side Story. You know, obviously came to stage from Stephen Sondheim and Leonard Bernstein back in the late 50s. That has been, you know, it has come back several times, has been on the screen in the Steven Spielberg movie from a couple of years ago, and now is coming back to the Lyric Opera of Chicago. Now, once a year, the Lyric Opera puts on a good old-fashioned American Broadway musical, not a non-operatic production. And this year, it's going to be West Side Story, June 2nd through the 25th. They put on larger-than-life productions at the Lyric Opera. I cannot wait to see the show and how they're going to do it on the Lyric Opera stage. But it is coming. I wanted you to know that so you could get tickets to, you know, bring the family and experience this, another classic of American theater, West Side Story. If you go to westsidestorychicago.com, you can get ticket information about seeing West Side Story put on by the Lyric Opera of Chicago at the Civic Opera House. Again, it's June 2nd through June the 25th. Tickets at westsidestorychicago.com. But guess what? I've got a free pair of tickets for you to go and see the show. And all you have to do is be caller number 10 on our contest line, which is 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. We'll set you up with a pair of free tickets to see that classic show. We've got some good shows coming into the Chicago area. You know what else I'm looking forward to is School of Rock out at the Paramount Theater in Aurora. It's just opened in previews, and we are going to take a bunch of our WGN listeners with me for a Dean's Night Out at the Paramount to see the show. It's based on the Jack Black movie. About a wannabe rock star teacher and a classroom of musician kids, and they sing and dance and rock, and these kids are actually very accomplished musicians in real life. They actually play their own instruments on stage, so it'll be a lot of fun for you to see the show. I think this would be a fun show to take the kids or the grandkids, because they will see people on stage just like themselves, their ages, singing and dancing and performing. I think it would be a lot of fun. So if you would like to join me for our Dean's Night Out for School of Rock, all you have to do is go to WGNradio.com/contest. Today is the final day. Tonight at midnight, you have to get your entry in for this. They're going to pick the winners first thing tomorrow morning. But go to WGNradio.com/contest and enter for the Dean's Night Out at the Paramount in Aurora for School of Rock. We're going to go Sunday, April 23rd, and I look forward to seeing you there. Should be a great time. All right, let's get into our Food Time show when we come back from a quick news update. Next,
I have this update from one of our weather spotters.
Yes.
It's snowing in Bartlett right now.
It's snowing in Bartlett. Okay.
I have here.
Snowing in Bartlett.
See,
I just heard that.
Yeah, see, that's the text.
Okay.
That's our account executive, Bob Coyne, sending me a text. Listen, that's the sound of snowing in Bartlett. And just in case you don't believe.
After we had 83 on Thursday.
Yeah. Right. I like how he.
Snowing in Bartlett.
There's your verification right there.
There you go.
Oh, boy.
Hope you enjoyed the nice weather. It's going to be gone for a while.
It's going to be gone. Well, you know, just hang in because it will be more or less seasonal later in the week.
Right.
60s, maybe 70 on Thursday. So
we had a very nice explanation from Tom Skilling's producer, Bill Snyder, a little earlier in the show, and we'll post that up. So if you missed it earlier, you can hear all of that. You love a good sandwich, don't you?
Of course.
Who doesn't love a sandwich?
Yeah.
It's the best thing. Do you have a favorite sandwich?
Oh, you know, I'll probably just default to a nice ham and cheese sandwich or turkey and Swiss cheese, something like that.
I had a nice ham and Swiss on rye.
Oh, yeah.
With a nice little brown mustard.
Mm-hmm.
Put a little lettuce and tomato on there.
Yep.
That was good.
Yep. Would be good.
That's not my favorite sandwich, though.
What's your favorite?
My favorite is my grilled cheese sandwich.
Oh, okay.
On sourdough bread.
Yeah.
With caramelized onions.
Okay.
And a sprinkling of those canned French fried onions, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You sprinkle that on there. So even though you've got the caramelized onions.
I like those on a burger also.
Those, it's good for a nice crunch.
Mm-hmm.
They taste good and it gives you a little crunch in there. That's my favorite sandwich. I made that on TV this week and it was a pretty popular recipe. But by far, the most popular sandwich that I made several different ones. Stanley Tucci's favorite sandwich. Are you ready for this now?
Go ahead.
You can use any kind of crusty Italian bread if you know, whatever you like. I love sourdough bread, so I put this on sourdough bread. On the bread, I spread some butter, thin layer of butter. That would be for the outsides of the sandwich. Okay, so now the buttered sides are laying down, so you can put on the toppings, which is some pesto right out of a jar. Thin layer of pesto, a few slices of prosciutto, you know, the Italian ham.
Mm-hmm.
Very delicious.
Very salty.
it's salty. It's definitely salty. Like me. A little salty. Some slices of mozzarella cheese. So that balances off the saltiness a little bit.
Yeah.
I put on some shredded white cheddar cheese. On top of this also, a couple of fresh basil leaves. Then I closed up the sandwich. You can put it just on a skillet. I did it on a panini press just because I like using a panini press. But you can just do it in a regular old skillet.
Mm-hmm.
Warm up the sandwich. All the cheeses melt. The prosciutto gives off its wonderful taste. That incredible pesto and basil. This is all Stanley Tucci's favorite sandwich. And I made those on TV this week. You would have thought that I invented the world's greatest food ever. That's how
everybody went crazy.
Everybody went crazy for the Stanley Tucci sandwich.
That sounds awful good.
It's pretty good.
Yes,
you can do it with ham. I mean, you can. That would be good with ham.
Right. Well,
also,
you know, in a sense, the prosciutto is a sort of ham.
Right.
Yeah.
That's the authentic way. That's the Stanley Tucci way to use the prosciutto.
Mm-hmm.
Because I like to sound
prosciutto.
I like to sound Italian.
Prosciutto. Ben.
Hey, put some prosciutto on that sandwich.
Does sound awful good.
It's a darn good sandwich.
Yep.
So I've got the recipe posted, WGNTV.com/Dean Cooks. And what I'm going to be cooking this coming Wednesday on TV, the springtime favorite, something with asparagus. I want to work up some clever recipes to use with asparagus, which I love. I did some on the grill the other night. They're fantastic. But I've got a couple of other recipes I want to try out on you. And I want to get what's the best thing that you do with asparagus? 312-981-7200.
And now at 1242, it's time to eat. Welcome into Food Time, Chicago Radio's only cooking and dining show. The original All Things Edible program. Heard every Sunday at this time, more or less. And today, we're going springtime with asparagus. We think of asparagus as the great side dish, and it most certainly is a good one. One of my favorites, to tell you the truth. That's one of the reasons that I love springtime so much, is that asparagus is in full season. And if you're going to find great asparagus now, you're going to find it, you know, at your stores in huge quantities. I've been seeing it at stores for the past, 10 days, something like that. I found some nice, big, beautiful stalks of asparagus the other day I grabbed a couple of pounds of them. I got to do something with these beautiful asparagus. I like the thicker stalks because I like to put it on the grill. You know, I clean the, you know, you can kind of break off the bottoms and it'll just sort of naturally break where the woodsy stalk meets the deliciousness of the actual vegetable. You can trim it with a knife, of course, but the snapping method also generally works pretty well. If you want to, you can take a vegetable peeler after you've broken off or cut off the woodsy stalk and peel the lower end of the asparagus a little bit so it's a little more tooth-friendly, I guess you might say. If you're not going to use them right away, you need to put them in either a glass or some kind of vessel so the bottoms of the asparagus sit in this jar or glass, whatever you're putting in, like flowers. You want to put them in like flowers. Trim off the bottom so the asparagus can easily soak up the water because sometimes they dry out from the time that they're shipped and then in the grocery store and sitting on the shelf for a while, the bottoms dry out and they can't absorb any more moisture. But if you trim off the bottom just a little bit and put them in a jar or something like you would flowers, they'll last a whole bunch longer. But then when you get ready, you know, these ones that I bought the other day, I cleaned them up. I put some olive oil on them and I just put them right on the grill. A low heat. Don't want to burn them, but I put them under a low heat. I rotated them several times to get a nice, even, browning, I guess you might say. I like them a little al dente. I don't like the asparagus to be mushy, so, you know, because they're going to continue to cook a little bit when you take them off the grill. Just put them in the serving dish with some balsamic vinegar. Oh, that's heaven. I love roasted asparagus with olive oil and balsamic vinegar. That's just so delicious. But I know that there are lots of different ways because a lot of you are already texting in what you do with asparagus. Here is a recipe that is saying to wrap the asparagus with prosciutto, and put a layer of phyllo dough around them and roast them in the oven for 10 minutes until the phyllo dough gets slightly brown, and then put a little shaved Parmesan cheese on top. Oh, brother, does that sound delicious? That sounds absolutely fantastic. Here's somebody who doesn't care for asparagus and says, the best thing I do with asparagus is to never buy it. All right, well, to each his own. Most people, I think, do like it, though. Here's another one that says, asparagus strips on a ham steak, on toasted bread, and then covered in melted cheese. Sounds pretty good. I saw a recipe this week. I'm going to give it a try. I don't think I'm going to do it on TV because I just did a puffed pastry recipe a couple of weeks ago, so I don't want to repeat too quickly. But somebody took a puffed pastry, you know, right out of the dairy case or the frozen food case, spread it out, put the asparagus spears on top of it, and then some shredded Gruyere cheese. You can use whatever kind of cheese you want. Gruyere's a little expensive. It's delicious, but it's a little expensive. You can use Swiss cheese as an alternate. I used a white cheddar cheese this week. In the recipe that I did on television this week, it was very delicious because there was a little sharpness to it. And then, so the puff pastry, the asparagus, and the grated cheese. A fantastic dish. You put it in the oven for, what, maybe 10, 15 minutes, something like that. The puff pastry cooks, the asparagus cooks, the cheese melts. What more do you want in life, really? Here's somebody that says that they blanch them and wrap them in pancetta and grill them until they're crispy. That's very similar to the prosciutto recipe that we have. Here's someone from the 219 area code. I love to make a ham and asparagus quiche. Oh, that sounds good. That sounds delish. Here is one, let me see here, that said, oh, I had some thin asparagus I bought at the store the other day. I chopped it and put it in with some spinach and some peas into an omelet. That sounds like a fantastic idea. I love that. I've got some other recipes for you that I'll share in a minute. But Steve is on the line with, I'm told, Steve, that this is the greatest asparagus recipe ever. Is that correct?
I believe so.
All right. Let us have it.
Okay, what I do is I get a couple of bunches. I prefer the thumb size instead of the pinky size.
Me too.
And I will saute those in a stainless steel bowl with the salsa, S-O-U-Z-A, and some olive oil. Put those in there. I have a basket on for my grill, which will hold it. I will cook those. I will sit there and I will take Hormel pepperoni minis.
Huh.
Put those in there, and then I'll cut up some cherub tomatoes, add those into it.
Oh, nice.
From there, I'll add mozzarella and Parmesan cheese. Nice. Put that back in the bowl, cover it up, warm it up, and it melts, and you can sit there. You can put any type of dressing that you want, any kind of vinaigrette. Raspberry works very good with this.
Oh, that sounds fantastic with raspberry. I love that. And I love all the melted cheeses in there. I love the the little pepperoni bits in there. What a variety of flavors. Did you invent this yourself?
It was hit or miss.
Yeah. You just sort of, I'll try this, I'll try that. This works. That didn't. You know, so it kind of evolved, I'll bet, right?
And we know cooking is experimenting our flavors.
Yeah, yeah. I love that. Isn't that great this time of year, though, when the asparagus is in season and you go to the store and you see these fantastic stalks? I actually get excited. I probably need a few more hobbies in my life, but I get super excited.
Yeah, it's on the side of the road. I'll go pick it wild.
I've never done that, but I have picked it up at farmers markets, though, where it's much longer, you know, and it's a different preparation process. But, man, what a difference in the taste, though, right?
Yes, it is.
Well, I love that recipe, Steve. I appreciate your call. Thank you.
Enjoy.
Thank you very much. 312-981-7200. I'm going to do asparagus on TV on my cooking segment this coming week. Give me a couple of ideas of what you think I should do. Jerry's got a recipe as well. Hi, Jerry. You're on WGN.
Hi. Thank you, Dean. I make a Tuscan roasted asparagus. Mm. You melt butter in, like 2 tablespoons of butter in a baking dish, and you roll the asparagus in the butter, and then you top it with chopped onion and sliced tomatoes, fresh basil leaves, and thyme and pepper, and grated Parmesan cheese on top, and put it in the oven.
Wow. Wow, does that sound good?
It's delicious.
that sounds amazing. Whoa, now walk me through that one more time.
Okay.
Because when you said butter, I was like, butter.
You melt a couple tablespoons of butter in a baking dish.
Got it, okay.
And then you put your asparagus in a single layer, and you kind of roll it around in the butter.
Yeah.
and then you put chopped onion on top of the asparagus.
Onion, tomato, you said, right?
Sliced tomatoes.
Yeah, okay.
Yes, on top of that. Then some basil leaves, and I kind of cut them up so they're not a whole leaf. I kind of, you know, just cut them up a little bit.
That releases the oils, by the way, in the,
okay.
The basil.
Well, I don't know what it does, but it makes it taste good.
It makes it more flavorful when you do
And
that.
Some thyme.
Yeah, oh, thyme is good.
Black pepper.
Yeah.
And then top that with grated Parmesan cheese.
Grated Parm. Oh, man. That sounds...
And they put it in the oven for about a half an hour.
Right,
at
right.
350.
Yeah. And then, what would you typically serve that with?
Oh, I serve it, like today I'm making filet roast on the grill.
Nice.
So I'll have that as a side dish. And I've made it with chicken as a side dish.
Yeah.
And like an Italian-style chicken.
Mm.
So it goes with a lot of things.
Jerry, good stuff. I love that. Thank you so much. Have a great day today.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Yeah, we always run out of time here on our food time segment to get you some of those recipes. I wanted to share one recipe that I do all the time on the grill. It is a Japanese usage of asparagus called negemaki, which is a beef roll. You know, you pound out a nice piece of beef, pound it out pretty thin, put a few of those little thin asparagus stalks in the middle of it, roll it up, tie it up. Oh, I forgot to mention that you need to marinate the beef and some teriyaki sauce first for about half an hour or so. Roll it up, put it on the grill. The beef cooks, the asparagus cooks, and the combination of the beef and the asparagus is amazing. I am going to be doing some asparagus recipes on my Wednesday cooking segment. It's usually about 9:35 every Wednesday morning on your WGN TV morning news.